radical left has taken over the Democratic Party.
Hello and welcome to Think Progressively, covering politics and all the other chaos life has to offer. This is episode 23, recorded on Friday, February 5th from Milwaukee. Oh my god, that's a lot of Fs. I'm Joe.
And I'm Jason.
And on today's episode, we will discuss the history and the future of the Senate filibuster. But first, the headlines.
The fact is that everything he's saying so far is simply a lie. I'm not here to call out his lies. Everybody knows he's a liar.
Up first in headlines, the Chiefs are going to win the Super Bowl, or Tom Brady will become the GOAT.
I think he's already got that status.
Man, I don't want to like him.
You don't have to like him.
You just got respect.
You just have to acknowledge the fact that he's the most prolific quarterback in NFL history.
Who do you want to win the Super Bowl?
The Chiefs.
Yeah?
And I'm happy that the Buccaneers got to the Super Bowl because
I hate
the Packers.
No, oh my God. Get out of here. I'm done with you.
So I'm glad for that, but now they can lose.
We'll never go to the Super Bowl. I'm so sad. I mean, we have been to the Super Bowl, unlike some other teams.
Oh, the Vikings have been to the Super Bowl, Joe.
Oh, I'm sorry, when?
They've been four times.
How long
They just
ago?
Don't ever win.
Oh, okay.
They're historically known for getting there. But just like the Packers, they do also lose in the NFC Championship game quite a bit. Not as many times,
I will say,
as Aaron Rodgers, but...
When was the last time the Vikings were in the NFC Championship? It was like, a couple of years ago?
Yeah, they lost to the Eagles.
Yeah, I was actually pretty sad they didn't make the Super Bowl. I wanted them to go to the Super Bowl that year.
Yeah, that's fine. The only time I'm glad they lost is when they had Brett Favre as their quarterback.
Well, now that we're super upset and depressed about our teams not being in the Super Bowl, let's go to the next headline, which is there was a military coup in Myanmar.
There was in You Can Do It, So Can We news.
In copycat coup news.
We can coup. In news that may sound familiar, Myanmar's military leaders declared the November elections to be fraudulent.
They did.
Despite a landslide victory.
And staged an official coup and went and arrested their civilian leader, who won their election by a landslide, Aung San Suu Kyi, who is currently in custody as of right now.
And charged with having illegal two-way radios.
Yeah, she got recently booked for having, I think, what was it, illegally importing 10 walkie-talkies.
That her security team was using. Damning charges.
And this is a very long, convoluted story as to why this coup happened. There has been a lot of animosity between Suu Kyi and the military of Myanmar. And there's actually a lot of personal animosity between Suu Kyi and the commander-in-chief of the military, who actually wanted to be president after he retired. But Suu Kyi said, screw you, and no.
And all of the people of Myanmar as well.
Right. So there's a lot of nuance to this. It's still not great. No one's happy about it. Biden's administration did release a statement saying that they do condemn the coup and they do wish for the release of Suu Kyi, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen.
They have had a military junta, is a fun word to say, for a long time previously that had the same condemnations from the international community and did not really sway them for a very long time. And they do also have China, big surprise, as their main ally.
If you do want to learn more about this, the New York Times did a daily podcast, I think it was yesterday, about the whole history of the Myanmar coup, and I highly recommend checking it out. They go into great detail about the history of Aung San Suu Kyi and the weird relationship she has with the military there.
Nobel Peace Prize winner.
Yep.
Two things that I'm sure Donald Trump is very envious about the leadership in Myanmar currently.
And this isn't a headline, but did you see that Donald Trump got ousted from the Stage Actors Guild?
No.
Yeah, he got released from the state, or he was asked to step away, I think, from the Stage Actors Guild, and he sent back like the craziest reply in history, saying like, screw you, you're nothing without me, I'm gonna be so much better without you now, I brought in so much money into this union, you know, you'll be nothing without me.
Known for his support of unions, Donald
right.
Trump, and only in the Screen Actors Guild because he requires anyone filming on any of his properties to give him a part in their movie.
That's gross. But in much more important news, I would highly recommend keeping an eye on Myanmar. This is, even though it's kind of a long time coming, this is still very big news. And the idea of democracy in any country like this where there's a power struggle is always always, you know, hopeful at best. So, you know, let's hope things turn out for the better, and but it doesn't look like it's going to be so.
Hopefully they do bow to international pressure, although, as we talked about, they have not in the past. Getting back to U.S. politics, the Senate just passed a $1.9 trillion COVID relief resolution. In what is being called a vote-a-rama, not a big fan of that term, the Senate spent most of the night, Thursday night into Friday morning, voting on amendments to the resolution. One piece of the bill that did not survive this vote was the $15 minimum wage.
Which is infuriating, but not a shocker.
Thank you, Republicans. And what's the theory, right? Oh, if they raise the minimum wage to $15, then prices of Big Macs will go up. That'll destroy the economy. I mean, people will be able to afford their rent and food, but the price of the Big Mac will go up. Just remember that when you go to vote next year or the next round of senators, this is not yet a finished bill that will get pushed to the president. It still does need to go through reconciliation, so some of the details can still change.
You know, I'm just reading a part of the article here, and I'm just so sick of voice votes. And the idea of like Senate narrowly beating another part in a voice vote just makes me so angry, especially when it has to come with increases to the pandemic funding. Just drives me insane. Screw you, Joni Ernst.
Someone we thought would lose their race.
Yep.
This year, unfortunately, she will be there for another 6 years.
But at the end of the day, this is still good news. This is obviously better than nothing, and at least they're getting something done. And hey, the whole idea of Biden not doing anything is kind of getting thrown out the window now, since he actually has that Senate majority of literally one tie-breaking vote from Kamala Harris. So this is the first time they're going to do that. I'm hoping more of it will come. Screw Republicans. Screw the whole unity crap of, you know, let's all be together, which we're actually going to talk about later in the main segment. But
yeah, kind of spoiling my take on.
Right. I mean, technically me too, so don't worry. But I'm glad Biden's actually making sure things are getting done. I'm glad our government's actually moving forward like it should be.
Government's actually supposed to approve legislation?
Whoa! Republicans had their own private voterama when they were deciding the fate of two Republicans, Liz Cheney and Marjorie Taylor Greene, for dramatically different reasons. Liz Cheney, a Republican leader in the House, caught a lot of fire, if you guys don't remember already, because she voted for impeachment of Donald Trump, because she is one of the more sane Republicans, which is almost like an oxymoron at this point.
And not saying much, honestly.
Right. But at least a lot of them did, I guess, the quote unquote correct, morally correct thing.
Also helped that it was a closed ballot.
Right.
So no grandstanding could be done.
Only 61 Republicans voted to remove Cheney from her positions, while 145 voted to let her stay.
And this is due to her voting to impeach Donald Trump. How dare she?
And the other vote was about the status of committee positions of Marjorie Taylor Greene.
And this was a full House vote, not just a GOP vote.
Correct.
Because they refused to actually do anything about her behavior, which has come to light, even though something that we had talked about before she was even elected.
I mean, you heard all last week how Nancy Pelosi was trying to talk to Kevin McCarthy, saying, you guys have to do something about this. And that's kind of where a lot of this process comes from. Parties usually deal with their own members and their own committee selections. That's how Steve King got ousted. He faced a lot of pressure from outside groups and Democrats, and then the Republicans eventually gave him the boot.
Because he was an outright racist, and they prefer their racists to be a little bit more subtle than that.
A little close to the vest, you know.
Keep the hood in the closet. Don't wear it to the proceedings.
But after a slew of new information coming out about Marjorie Taylor Greene's previous actions, including harassing David Hogg from the March for Our Lives and the Parkland shooting victim, talking about Jewish space lasers starting the California wildfires, and then also supporting the death of her colleagues.
Now, we had talked about that she was a crazy conspiracy theorist. She was
This is nothing new for us.
Yeah, she was a QAnon supporter. She believed in many conspiracy theories. She admitted herself. So the fact that she believes the California wildfires were started by Jewish space lasers funded by George Soros, not really all that surprising.
So Republicans had a private hearing about Marjorie Taylor Greene, and they voted to not do anything about it. In fact, they even gave her a standing ovation when she said that she learned her lessons, which just drives me insane.
She has the support of the QAnon people because she is one of them, and the Republicans know they need their support going forward. That is the base that has held up Donald Trump all these years, and nobody wants to lose them, even though they're crazy racists.
Well, and I don't know if you saw this, Jason, but she's already been posting about how She's been making millions already off of fundraising about this whole thing about being silenced by Democrats. She's becoming a martyr because of this crap now, too.
And she looks like Beast from the old Beauty and the Beast. It's very off-putting every time. I don't want to make it about her looks, but she looks exactly like Ron Perlman as the Beast from the old Beauty and the Beast sitcom. Just weird.
So since Republicans don't have a single adult in their entire party, apparently, Democrats decided to take it over and actually had an entire House vote to kick Marjorie Taylor Greene out of the education and labor committees that she was originally selected for.
Which effectively strips her of any power.
Yep. Now, Jason, I want to ask you this. Do you think the Democrats went too far? Because here's the deal. I'm going to just kind of give it what it is before I say my piece as well. Like I said before, usually it is up to the party to deal with their own committee selections. This really hasn't been done before. The idea of having the other party being the majority ousting someone else's party selection. So do you think they made the right choice here? And then do you think this will end up hurting us in the future?
So two different answers. Do I think they made the right choice? Yes. They made the choice not based on her conspiracy beliefs, but based on her support of violence against other members of the legislature. She had promoted posts calling for the execution of Nancy Pelosi and other House members. That is what they based her committee removal on, is someone who promotes violence and death against other members of the government. If you're just going on that condition and that being the level needed, the line, I'm fine with it. The problem is, and we'll definitely expand on this more as we get into the main segment, this is going to be abused by the Republicans as soon as they're able to get power. They already, as a result of this, held a vote to try to strip Ilhan Omar of her committee assignments, which of course failed because they don't have a majority in the House. But if they did have a majority in the House, which someday they might, that would have succeeded. And that will happen eventually, and they will not hold to the moral standard of it only coming when there's calls for violence against their fellows, as they've already proven. It's already happened. They said, well, Ilhan Omar made anti-Semitic remarks when she said that Israel has somehow hypnotized the world into not believing that they're
committing genocide.
Right. Like that they're oppressing the Palestinians. Well,
and that's a whole nother thing which makes me angry too, the fact that they would even compare it to Ilhan Omar and saying that, you know, equating criticism of Israel as a state versus just Jewish people in general is just erroneous.
And yeah, anti-Semitic stereotypes that Marjorie Taylor Greene has bought into, has supported over the years.
I mean, she literally said Muslims should not be in government. So what are we doing here then?
You have to prove a point. You have to say this is where we draw the line. So I agree with it, but yes, Republicans will weaponize this. They will use it against them. It's bound to happen. They've already tried, or at least made a stand of showing that they're going to abuse it. So, I mean, you have to fight dirty. That's what you have to do.
Did you see Kevin McCarthy try to negotiate with Nancy Pelosi saying, well, what if we just strip her from one committee?
Well, they said they would take her off the two that she's on and just put her on the small business. Right. Committee. Like, no, that's not the point.
Right. You're so bad. We need to take you off of these two committees because we do not trust you to run our government. But you know what? Go ahead with this other one. That's fine. That's insane.
And after all the praise we gave the voters of Georgia. And continuing the trend of moving the headlines closer to home, in Wisconsin, our GOP-led state assembly struck down the COVID mask mandate for all of an hour.
I hate this so much. I'm so angry. Granted, I am actually very happy that Governor Evers kind of ruined everything and just initiated another emergency anyway. But the fact that we still have a state assembly and a state senate that will gleefully remove a mask mandate when the preponderance of evidence shows that masks work and that we are actually doing the right things to slow coronavirus spread just blows my mind.
They don't care about public health. That's not the point of any of this. It's just a show.
But it's even dumber than that, because the things that they want are like, we need to open schools. Okay, well, the best way to open schools is to have a mask mandate so people don't get sick. Well, we want to open businesses and the economy up. Well, the best way to have businesses open is by having people wear masks.
Yeah, we've talked about this. I don't care what the law says. I will not eat in a restaurant, go to a bar until the coronavirus is basically gone, until the numbers are down to the point where I feel safe. I don't care that there's a law that says capacity only has to be this much. That's not what's keeping me home. It's the real threat of being sick and possibly dying, or at the very least, passing that on to other people, both inside and outside of my own family.
And let me make one thing very clear here, because for my Wisconsin listeners, you're going to hear this argument from conservatives all over the place, that the vote was not about the mandate itself. It was about the process. Have you heard this, Jason, yet?
Yes, yeah. It's about what powers does the governor have.
Right. If anyone tries to tell you that, immediately follow it up with the question, okay, so when is the House going to vote on a new mask mandate? Because Republicans have even said to reporters that when asked, okay, this is about the process, so when are you going to actually do something about the mask mandate? They immediately come back with, well, we're not going to actually do anything. Well, I don't think a mask mandate is going to actually ever pass.
And if it's about the process, they already went to the state Supreme Court, who voted in favor that it is part of the governor's powers, which is currently now up for appeal to the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, and might be voted on at some point. And with that band of lunatics, who knows what's going to happen?
This is insanity. What are we doing here?
If you say it's all about states' rights, well, we have a governor, the highest elected official in the state. And because the assembly is majority the other party, they don't want anything that he puts into action, which is a huge issue. It doesn't matter that it's just about public health and it's for the good of literally every citizen. He's a Democrat and they're Republicans, so they hate it.
Well, and they're willing to throw away their own ideologies for it. They're pro-business? Well, screw the businesses as long as we can destroy the Democrat governor. What the hell happened to facts don't care about your feelings? What the hell happened to the idea of being for businesses? What the hell happened to being for the economy? Literally, having a mask mandate will do great things in all those aspects. So what are you doing? What's the purpose of this other than trying to be petty and trying to gain power in your own state government, which is what this is. This is literally just a power grab move.
Having a mask mandate means that I will go to grocery stores and other places like Costco because I know everybody in there is going to be forced to wear a mask. So that makes me more comfortable to go out to those places.
And I also know that businesses will be pressured to have their employees and their customers to wear masks.
So it, in my case, and I'm sure I'm not the only one, it does help the economy actually by having the mask mandate in place because the coronavirus isn't going anywhere because not enough people take it seriously. Now, once we all get vaccinated and the numbers start coming down and I feel a little bit more comfortable, then we can talk about opening schools, having capacity at businesses back up. Maybe we'll start going to trivia night again. Things that I enjoyed doing, but I won't do right now with the current state. And that's what I don't get about this. That's what doesn't make sense to me. If the idea is we need to do things to benefit businesses, great. You know what you should do as a state assembly? Pass some laws to actually give money to businesses and their employees.
One of the first votes we had in what, like almost a year?
And we have one of the only full-time state assemblies in the United States, and they're still doing nothing and collecting a check. You don't want to know what abuse of state welfare is? Everyone in the state legislature right now.
And I know multiple people in the state house who are Democrats. You want to guess what they want to be doing right now with their time? They want to be in the goddamn Capitol. If the whole free market thing was actually based on real, like, moral and ethical principles, like libertarians and Republicans and conservatives think it is, then they would be the ones pushing for social use of masks.
Yeah, we need to have responsibility by the people because it's going to be up to
they
you.
They would be louder than us.
Yeah.
And they're not. They're standing in the way. I'm very upset about this. I'm just happy, like I said, I'm just happy Evers did something about it. And it just looked like the best political middle finger to the Republicans.
Yeah, because they got to gloat for all of an hour.
Right.
Like, oh, he struck down the mask mandate. What's that? Oh, he declared another state of emergency and there's another mask mandate in effect. Oops.
Suck it.
That was really a productive segment, wasn't it? It's hard to get any word in with this clown.
So, Joe, tell me the tale of Philip J. Buster.
I don't know the tale of Philip J. Buster.
Better known to his friends as Phil, or Philly if you're nasty.
Philly Buster? My joke. You thought my jokes were bad?
It works better, like, in writing.
Oh, okay. Sounds good.
Philip Buster.
I'm also seeing it in writing, too, and not impressed. How's it feel, Jason?
I'm fine.
So let's talk about the filibuster. As of right now, there is a lot of talk that you may have heard about getting rid of the filibuster, voting to take away the filibuster, hearing Mitch McConnell cry like a little baby to keep the filibuster, a bunch of stuff. So we wanted to take this time to actually dive into what the filibuster was, what the history of it is, and talk about where it's going to go from here and what you probably should expect in the upcoming couple of weeks. So what is the filibuster, Jason?
It is what we do on this podcast every week. A bunch of talking to prevent anything from being done.
To avoid responsibility.
And for no real purpose at all.
Well, the big thing we need to understand here is that there is a big distinction between what a lot of people know as the filibuster and the filibuster rule. So when most people think about the filibuster, which I'm sure you listening at home right now may understand, is you may picture someone talking for a very long period of time. You may remember Bernie Sanders' 2010 filibuster, where he lasted 8 hours or 8.5 hours, where he was like the only guy in the Senate hall just talking by himself. But it also pales in comparison to the record holder Strom Thurmond back in 1957, who holds the single longest filibuster in U.S. history with 24 hours and 18 minutes.
It must have been for a really important reason, right? Something he really believed in.
I mean, he did really believe in it. You're right. He was arguing against the Civil Rights Act, so that's not great.
Strom Thurmond was a senator longer than anyone else in U.S. history. Over 100 years old, he was still getting reelected until he died. And this is the segregationist who argued against any equal rights for black people. There's no such thing as structural racism, Joe.
Nope, not at all. So but when we were talking about the filibuster, and when you hear senators like Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and others talk about the filibuster, they're talking about the actual Senate filibuster rule, Standing Rule 22 in the U.S. Senate. This is the method of actually stopping a debate from continuing on forever by invoking a thing called cloture. And that usually means that as of right now, you can go on a debate forever unless there is an actual vote to stop it, which is the cloture vote. That vote requires a 3/5 vote or 60 votes in the Senate right now. And I do want to make one thing very clear here is that this is not a partisan issue necessarily. I mean, both Democrats and Republicans have used the filibuster throughout U.S. history. So like this isn't anything super crazy. We will talk about the fact that Republicans like skyrocketed up the amount of filibustering in recent years, but
technically Strom Thurmond was a Democrat,
right,
in 1957 when the Democrats were the racist party before the Southern Strategy flipped it around.
Well, let's talk about where the filibuster actually comes from. So originating from a Dutch word meaning pirate, I have no idea why, it was actually created accidentally in 1806. And that's because just before 1806, the first U.S. Senate actually did have rules to move previous questions by a simple majority vote. But back then, Vice President Aaron Burr argued that this rule was redundant and unnecessary. So in 1806, after Vice President Burr was already gone, the Senate did modify those rules and got rid of the redundancy. Unfortunately, that left no alternative for terminating debate on the Senate floor. Thus, the filibuster was born.
And the Senate was much smaller back then.
Right.
So they weren't expecting someone was going to sit up there and talk for 12 hours straight. They figured, go for a couple hours, and then you're going to crash out and move on. What they didn't want is the vote to prematurely end debate.
Correct.
And that was kind of the issue.
And this was based on the idea of having unlimited debate in the Senate. Actually, in 1841, when the Democratic minority hoped to block a blank bill promoted by Kentucky Governor Henry Clay, he threatened to change the Senate rules that allow the majority to close debates. However, Missouri Senator Thomas Hart Benton rebuked Clay for trying to stifle the Senate's right for unlimited debate, because this was a very, I guess, value-based or a principle-based argument they had here, where they want, the Senate usually tries to pride themselves as a consensus and well, I guess, thought out and well debated House, as opposed to like the House of Representatives, which is much bigger and more majority rule.
Supposed to be, yeah, the more mature. That's why they have 6-year terms in the Senate instead of the 2-year terms in the House. Your senators are supposed to be longer serving. They're supposed to be more dignified, more of the grown-ups in the room.
Correct. Back when America was great.
And had slaves.
Fast forward a couple of years, the filibuster became much more popular in the 1850s, and that continued for another half century, all the way up until World War I. In 1917, President Woodrow Wilson urged the Senate to adopt a rule allowing cloture after anti-war senators filibustered and ultimately killed a bill that would have allowed Wilson to arm merchant vessels during the war.
One of the few presidents that can honestly give Donald Trump a run for worst president in history, Woodrow Wilson.
Yeah. And they did. They actually did create a cloture rule in 1917, which required a two-thirds vote or 67 senators vote. Debate about the filibuster actually went back and forth until 1975, where the Senate adjusted its cloture rule again to the three-fifths vote we know today.
And then further adjustments were made in 2013 when Senate Democrats, frustrated with the many, many blockages of President Obama's cabinet and judicial appointments, which at that point had an unprecedented level of filibustering.
I mean, we really mean unprecedented level.
Quote from the then Democratic Majority Leader Harry Reid, in some 230 plus years, there have been 168 filibusters of executive and judicial nominations. Half of them have occurred during the Obama administration, which is true. 82 of those 168 filibusters occurred under Obama, or 49% were made from 2009 to 2013. I wonder why there were so many under Obama. What was it about Barack Obama that would make the Republican Party filibuster to block all of his nominations? What was different about Barack Obama compared to Bill Clinton and Jimmy Carter and all of the other Democratic presidents?
I can't think of a single thing.
I don't know. I don't know what it is.
So they ultimately enacted what was called the nuclear option. And to briefly explain what the nuclear option is, cloture requires 60 votes in the Senate to end a filibuster. We already talked about that. However, changing the procedural rules of voting in the Senate only requires a simple majority.
Oh, he's black. He's black. He was black, Joe. That's what it was.
Oh, man. I thought that bit ended. So Democrats proceeded to change the rules so the filibuster could no longer be used for executive and judicial nominations, except for the Supreme Court. The vote passed in 2013 with a 52-48 vote, with all Republicans voting against, shocker, and actually three Democrats voting against it as well. The president pro tempore, the second highest ranking member of the Senate after the VP, Patrick Leahy, is it Leahy or Leahy?
Leahy.
Thank you, Leahy, ended the motion saying, quote, under the precedent set by the Senate today, November 21st, 2013, the threshold for cloture and nominations, not including those to the Supreme Court of the United States, is now a majority. This is the ruling of the chair. Republican Mitch McConnell was then furious at it because, well, he took power away from them.
He was an angry turtle.
And said that Democrats will rue the day that they did this to Mitch McConnell and Republicans. Well, it wasn't soon after that Democrats rued the day. It was pretty quickly after. Democrats lost the Senate majority in 2014, just a year later. And the big distinction in that procedural change, if you didn't already notice, was the Supreme Court. This means that Republicans were still able to filibuster a SCOTUS nominee because that still required a 60 vote to pass.
Then, as we all know, we have the date marked on our calendars. March 16th, 2016, President Obama nominated Merrick Garland to the Supreme Court. The Republicans filibustered the nomination, and Merrick Garland was never nominated.
Nope.
While this was happening, Democratic Senator Chris Coons was quoted as saying, if 7 months of preventing Judge Merrick Garland from getting a hearing and a vote is anything, it is the longest and most successful partisan filibuster in Senate history.
He didn't even know. He was so naive.
On January 3rd, 2017, Merrick Garland's nomination expired with the end of the 114th Congress, 293 days later.
Over 9 months, they filibustered somebody. Then we all know that after the 2016 election, Donald Trump took over and nominated Neil Gorsuch. Right after he nominated Neil Gorsuch, Republicans detonated the nuclear option again, but for this time, Supreme Court nominees.
Which meant that both Brett Kavanaugh and Amy Coney Barrett could not be filibustered by the Democrats.
So the question remains, why didn't Democrats enact the nuclear option for Supreme Court justice nominees back in 2013?
Because they had a higher opinion of the sense of honor of Republicans, which now, of course, we know much better.
Well, that and a couple of other things. So, like, for example, this was already a pretty controversial thing to do back in 2013. Like I said before, even three Democrats voted to not go with them to do the nuclear option. And frankly, at the time, they were just receiving a lot of pushback for this. Critics of the move, mostly Republicans, obviously, thought this would lead to more partisan nominations, opportunism, and court packing. And actually, I found a 2005 Associated Press and Ipsos poll, which found that 78% of Americans believe the Senate should take an assertive role in examining judicial nominees rather than just give the president the benefit of the doubt. Therefore, Democrats thought that there was a lot of pressure to make sure that the Senate remained independent and not just another blank check or a blank stamp to whatever the president recommended. And that brings us to today.
So the filibuster can no longer be used for executive nominations of any kind.
Nope.
And can only be used to filibuster legislation. And really, no big legislative package has passed the Senate since the Affordable Care Act under Obama.
That is correct. And you may have seen in headlines how Mitch McConnell has been trying to negotiate or fight or beg Chuck Schumer to not do what he and Harry Reid did back those years ago, employ the nuclear option.
To get rid of the filibuster on legislation.
Correct. A couple of quotes from Mitch McConnell. You don't destroy the Senate for a fleeting advantage. Another one. This was from his scathing rebuke of the whole thing on the Senate floor. Instead of building a stable consensus, we'd be chaotically swapping party platforms, swinging wildly between opposite visions that would guarantee that half of the country is miserable and resentful at any given time.
Instead, we just do absolutely nothing, which favors the Republican Party.
Right. And then one more tweet I found from January 26th, which was, today I made clear that if Democrats ever attack the key Senate rules, it would drain the consent and comity out of the institution. A scorched earth Senate would hardly be able to function. It wouldn't be a progressive man's dream. It would be a nightmare. I guarantee it. A scorched earth Senate. So, Jason, that's where we are right now with the Senate filibuster. What do you think we should be doing? What do you think Democrats should be doing? And what's going to happen next?
All right, my thoughts. They need to get rid of it. They need to change the rules, get rid of the filibuster. They're not going to be able to do it through legislation. Obviously, they're not going to get a 60 vote majority, which is what we need to do anything in the Senate, which is the problem. The Senate was not supposed to be a supermajority legislature. That's not the way it was designed. All these people that like to suck off the founding fathers, well, this is not what they envisioned when they required only a simple majority to pass legislation in the Senate. They didn't want it to be a supermajority.
Because it's all about consensus. That's the idea of the Senate.
So nothing gets passed the Senate. Nothing. That's why you have this huge overreach of power on the executive side, which I do not like. The executive branch has gained so much power over the last 30 years because the Senate can't do anything. So in order to pass any meaningful legislation, it's done through executive action, which is not supposed to be the rule of the president.
Which actually goes right into what Mitch McConnell did say before, which is executive actions can be overturned with every presidential administration.
So it just goes back and forth.
Right.
In order to restore balance to the three branches of government, we need to be able to pass legislation in the Senate.
Well, we need a functioning government to have a balance of government.
Well, what they need to do is get rid of the filibuster. That would mean that a simple majority would be allowed to pass legislation. That probably won't happen because, as we talked about, I think they're too afraid that it will backlash upon them. Although I'm personally not worried about it because, again, as we talked about in a very previous episode, why progressives should vote for Joe Biden, there is no party platform for the GOP. They have zero party platform. They literally said, we'll just do whatever Donald Trump wants to do. And he lost the presidential race. So they are left currently with no platform. What are they going to pass? They're not interested in passing anything. They're conservatives. They want things to stay the same. That's they're successful in doing that because nothing ever passes the Senate right now. So it favors them. If we change the rules so that a simple majority will pass legislation, we can actually do the things that people voted for Joe Biden to do, which is the $15 minimum wage, which is COVID relief, which is
Student debt cancellation.
All of the things that Joe Biden ran on that people voted for him for that cannot be accomplished in our current environment without him making up all of these executive actions that do sidestep the entire purpose of our legislature. Yes, it can also benefit Republicans when they're in power. That's fine. If they want to pass actual legislation and have that be on record and have their political futures dependent on people voting for them based on their record instead of just being the obstructionist party, I'm all for that. That's the way it should work. Our legislators create legislation. They vote on it. It goes to the president. He either signs it or he vetoes it. And you vote for the party based on what they actually get passed instead of having it the way it is now, which is nothing gets done. And then you have someone like Donald Trump come in and run on nothing ever gets done. Government is broken. I'm going to drain the swamp. And everyone's like, yeah, that's right. Nothing ever gets done. This is garbage. Let's vote for this guy. That's what happened. That's a big part of Trump's populist appeal is he ran on that platform of government is broken. Nothing ever happens.
According to a status report, Congress currently has a 71% disapproval rating from Americans. They don't like them. They think they don't do anything. For God's sakes, they already established the name for Democrats as the do-nothing Democrats.
So that's my stance. I imagine yours is very similar.
Yeah, I mean, I pretty much completely agree with what you just said. Shocker, right? The progressive agrees with the progressive.
I will say this, not to cut you off here. Going into this episode, because of all the things we talked about with the getting rid of the executive filibuster and all the problems that caused and the fact that they didn't do it for Supreme Court nominations and then the Republicans did and it led to the Republicans being able to steal a judicial nomination, which is extremely important in the grand scheme of things. I was all ready to say, no, I think we should keep the filibuster. Anytime Democrats try to do something like this, it always backfires on them. They never really take advantage of these things because they have too much of a sense of decorum. Sure. They don't play dirty like the Republicans do. The Republicans don't care. I mean, we saw it. It's gloves are off. They don't care. Mitch McConnell completely doesn't care that he's a hypocrite for not voting for Merrick Garland and then ramming through Amy Coney Barrett as fast as he could. He knows that's completely hypocritical. He does not care.
Well, he knows that's hypocritical calling for the nuclear option right after President Trump gets elected, but then saying we should keep the filibuster now that they're out of power. He knows he's being a hypocrite. He doesn't care.
Yeah, so they've shown that all they care about is power. They don't care about the rules. They don't care about what's fair, what's just, what's right, what the American people want. They just care about their own party's power and what they can get for their donors.
And that's kind of where I rest my opinion on. So, like I said before, 71 disapproval rating for Congress already. Everybody already hates Congress. They think they don't do anything. So do something about it. At least for me, I'm very much sick of a Congress that literally doesn't do anything for the last decade. I mean, that's kind of like what we were talking about before, where the last major piece of legislation was the Affordable Care Act, which is way too long to have something happen.
And has been constantly attacked by executive action to strip it.
Right. So my suggestion is for Democrats, go big. If you go big and show that you're actually getting results done for the people who are voting for you, they will vote for you again because they are also sick of this, because they also are sick of the swamp or whatever, the elites or whatever you want to call people in Washington. So if you show them that you're actually going to deliver for them, they will vote for you. And then my other big thing is here. We already saw back in 2013 that Democrats changed precedent and Republicans talked about unity and consensus and stuff like that. And they try to keep some institutionalism by saying, all right, well, with Supreme Court nominations, we're going to keep that able to be filibustered because that's what the institution should be. And Republicans said they wouldn't get rid of it. And they did anyway in 2017. So I do not trust Republicans to not do the same thing that they did back in 2017 now. And especially now, knowing that Democrats are already fighting and arguing for it, the minute that they're back in power, and let's face it, they will be in power again very soon. They're going to say, well, Democrats argued for it, so you're saying you're not in for it now? Oh, Democrats are such hypocrites. They don't do anything. God, get rid of them. Get rid of all these crazy Democrats who don't do anything for the American people. It's the same strategy over and over and over again because you refuse to actually get dirty and, like Jason says, take the gloves off. So get rid of the filibuster. Show them that you actually mean business. Show the American people you mean business and get results done because that's what we want. We want a government that actually does things here.
Kill Philip Buster. Death the Philip Buster.
Think Progressively does not endorse the death of any person named Philip Buster.
Kill him.
And then to wrap it all up, Jason, what are we expecting to see in the next couple of weeks?
Nothing.
Yeah, that about wraps. wraps it up.
It would have to be a very popular piece of legislation failing to pass because of the filibuster, and then that being used as the example and why they're going to have to get rid of it. That's what they should do. They should propose something like $15 minimum wage. If it gets knocked out of this COVID bill, just propose $15 minimum wage. It's very popular. Once that gets filibustered, then get rid of it. Get rid of the filibuster. Pass the $15 minimum wage. Be the heroes. That's what they should do. I don't know that that's going
to
happen.
Expect to see a lot of headlines surrounding Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema, the two big moderate Democrats who will just refuse to do any work or legislation based on the filibuster. They initially come out against any actions to remove the filibuster, but then they would kind of teeter back and forth.
Sinema said she wouldn't even consider changing her mind on it.
But then even then she like kind of did anyway, like a couple days later. So they're both playing their cards pretty closely. You're also going to see a lot of tension within the Democratic Party, but like Jason said, just be the heroes and just keep the pressure on. Joe Manchin's still a Democrat. He will do the right thing as opposed to what a Republican would. But I would say don't expect anything about the filibuster happening relatively soon, probably not least within the first 100 days. I wouldn't even assume that.
And also don't name your kids Kyrsten.
Nah,
it's a terrible name.
Don't do that either.
To any Kyrstens out there, I'm sorry, but that's your parents' fault. I didn't name you that.
I didn't want to end it.
I think we just did.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you in the next episode. You can find us on Facebook and Twitter at ThinkProPod. You can email us at thinkpropod@gmail.com. And remember, when in doubt, think progressively. I got to do my Mitch McConnell voice. I can't do a good Mitch McConnell.
You're doing it.
I need a floppier
voice. Yeah, a little bit more turtle in there. Blah, blah, blah.
I need more Droopy Dog or Richard Nixon.
The Futurama version.
Yeah. Instead of... No, I'm not going to do a voice.
Think of me as the Grim Reaper of socialism.
God.
That's getting cut. In order to restore the balance to the three-party system, the three-branch Davidians, David Koresh, in order to restore power to David Koresh.
I mean, he did have way too much executive power, I'm not gonna lie.
Yeah.